Live and local. This is Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game.
The Houston Astros are world champions.
Streaming live on 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com. This is the Jordy Holtberg Show.
Hey, baby, we're going to be here all day.
Call us up at 337-706-0111.
I like this kind of party.
Now, here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Wow. Good afternoon and welcome to this Wednesday, hump day, June 16th, the year 2021. It's 93 degrees in the very limited breeze. Feels like 100, and man, are things percolating around the world of the NBA. My goodness gracious. Stan Van Gundy, done. A parting of the ways. And boy, this just sums up the NBA in New Orleans in a nutshell. And puts even more pressure on a guy whose only claim to fame was to win a championship because he had the best player on the planet on his team. And that was LeBron James, and I'm talking about David Griffin. The greatest coach in the world could have come out and coached this Pelicans team, and they may still not have made it to the playoffs because it wasn't a team. It's a hodgepodge, a collection of misfit toys. It just doesn't work. So David Griffin, who tells a splendid tale in front of all of those with a microphone, he says things that just effuse eloquence and makes you feel like he's the smartest person in the room. But production tops everything. Tops everything. And the Pelicans haven't. And I've been around for the New Orleans Jazz when the ownership packed up and moved them out. I was there through some lean years of the Hornets when they came back to New Orleans. I was there when they drafted Chris Paul and how he turned that program around and made them a playoff team, and yet still under the ownership of George Shin and management, couldn't keep him. Couldn't fault Chris Paul. Then, through the luck of the draft, they get another superstar type player in Anthony Davis, and again, management can't punch their way out of a paper bag. They can't put the right pieces around it. They don't know how to deal with it. They don't know how to deal with the salary cap and their evaluation of talent. Once again, another superstar leaves the door. And now their third superstar in franchise history is entering his third year, and it will be his third head coach. David Griffin, the spotlight is on you, big fella. Quit talking and start putting a team together, or I'll be the first to sing your praises out the door. So tired of it. Was not tired of watching Kevin Durant last night. What a superstar performance it was by the Slim Reaper. My goodness gracious. What a game. What a performance. What a player. We'll deal with that as well. But other news in the NBA, the LA Clippers just lost the biggest superstar in the playoffs right now in Kawhi Leonard. He's going to miss game five with a knee injury, maybe even more than that. Chris Paul, the aforementioned CP3, is in the NBA protocols. He is out indefinitely with COVID-19. When will he be back? Your guess is as good as mine. And Scott Brooks is now out as the head coach of the Washington Wizards. So there's a bunch of teams out there now looking for a basketball coach. the Boston Celtics, the Indiana Pacers, the Orlando Magic, the Portland Trail Blazers, the Washington Wizards, and now the New Orleans Pelicans. All out. All out. Six head coaching openings in the NBA. We'll talk with Ali Cassell here in a few minutes from At the Bird Writes, and try to figure out. We had heard rumblings about the players not vibing and jiving with Stan Van Gundy. It's a fine line as an older coach with antiquated ways gelling and blending with a very young team. But we'll find out from Ali all about that. We hear names being mentioned. It's just like anything else. Everybody's name's going to be in the loop. The question is, do the Pelicans go back to a retread, or do they set a historical way and hire a female like Teresa Witherspoon? I will talk all about that. The latest on the LSU baseball search, it's all quiet. It's all quiet. I talked to my good friend that covers Ole Miss baseball, and he thinks that there's kind of a wink and a nod type of offer on the table for Mike Bianco. Mike Bianco was meeting with his athletic director this morning, who said as of yesterday he had known nothing about LSU contacting Mike Bianco or anything along those lines. What is normally done is the athletic director of LSU contacts the athletic director of Ole Miss and says, hey, can we talk to your coach? Or the athletic director from LSU contacts Mike Bianco's agent and says, hey, we're kind of interested in your guy. Do you think he'd be interested in sitting down and talking about our job? So I don't know how it's gone or how it's, what's happened there. Who knows? I have no earthly clue. It has gone very, very underground and very, very quiet, as well it should. It's an important decision, and let the decision makers make the decision, and then we'll all hear about it. It'll leak out eventually, and something will take place, and I think it'll take place sooner rather than later. I do. So there you go on that front. Mike Bianco meeting with his athletic director this morning. Is that one of those, hey, look, I've talked to him, this is what's available. This is what they've offered. I'm thinking about taking it. The question is, would Ole Miss try to keep Mike Bianco? I don't think they want to get into a dollar bidding war. You're not going to beat Scott Woodward in a dollar and cents bidding war. You're just not going to do it. So we'll deal and talk about that a little bit. Chris Reed, a former LSU Tiger baseball player, has some ideas. You just heard in the two-minute drill, and we discussed it yesterday, the $15 million naming rights contract, Our Lady of Lourdes Stadium, right there at Cajun Field. And how they're going to modernize and update step by step by step the stadium. Chris Reed has some ideas on what to do with the Taj Mahal, Alec Box Stadium, Skip Bertman Field. We'll talk to Chris at around 3:15. And then back and better than ever, and I have missed him so much. We used to have hump days with Huguenin. Well, Mike Huguenin is back after taking a brief hiatus from the world of sports. He is back with a new company, and he will explain that, his role, and we'll talk college football with my good buddy, Michael Huguenin. We're brought to you each and every day by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. Man, you really can shop right at ShopRite. The Astros defeated the Rangers with a Tennessee-style walk-off grand slam on Tuesday night. How about that one? And they'll be looking to take game two of the series tonight. You can listen to all the action right here. 103.7 The Game. Astro launch lifts off at 6:35. First pitch is set for 7:10. That's Rangers at the Astros tonight right here. 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station. I'm looking at the the weather. I mean, it is hot as Hades. It's supposed to be another hot day on Thursday. And then look out, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, it's coming. The rains, they are coming. So if you want to go get your grass cut, do it in the evening when the sun is setting and it's a little bit cooler. But get all that stuff done because we got something brewing out there in the Gulf, and it's going to cause a lot of rain and wind, just what we need. Oh, my God. I don't, you know, the weather's warm, but I'd rather have it hot than the threat of flooding occurring once again. We shall see. All right, the big headline of the day coming from left field. I mean left field. Stan Van Gundy out. We'll talk with Ali Cassell about that next.
Back in the day, he covered the New Orleans Hornets.
Now he's talking about the Zion Williamson era of the Pelicans. On 103.7 The Game, let's get back to the Jordy Holtberg Show, where he's the real MVP.
From the Hornets to the Pelicans, one thing remains constant. How much faith do you have in the executive department that makes decisions on the hirings, the firings, and the acquisitions of players and talent? How much faith do you have in them? Wow. He lasted, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt of saying 9 months. Hired in October, fired in June. Stan Van Gundy, done. Ali Cassell from At The Bird Writes, kind enough to join us yet again. Ali, I was like, what are we going to talk about today? And around 11 o'clock, boom, there it is. Wow, that came out of left field to me. I've got a sneaky feeling that didn't come out of left field for you. Tell me your thoughts on this decision that I'm sure was being bandied about for quite some time but came to a head today.
Right. This has been an explosive news day, hasn't it, Jordy? Middle of June. And of course, despite the playoffs going on and talk of injuries, right, Kawhi, right, probably done for the season, the Pelicans found their way into the news mix, and of course, it's not good news. Yeah. It's not that surprising to me. It is surprising that it came a month after the regular season ended. I thought if they were going to make a move, they would have announced right. this earlier, because without a doubt, there was a little bit of a disjointedness between a lot of the players and the head coach. You know, we had concerns at the start when Stan Van Gundy was hired in October, how would he mesh, right, with such a young core being an older, kind of more right. traditional throwback coach? And we got our answer over the course of this season. You know, there was instances and rumors of him not getting along with Brandon Ingram specifically, but there were others, right, in post-game media sessions, and especially at the end of the regular season, some players talked about how it was a difficult transition, including Josh Hart, and we even heard Zion kind of bring up coaching when he was asked about the disappointing season. So to me, that echoed right. You probably had an issue to deal with, but like I said, I thought it would have been handled up front. The fact they waited a month, it sounds like they're more on the side of the players, because I thought that's where the move would happen, right? In the upcoming free agency, and once the trades are available, once we start next season, then perhaps we would maybe move off a player or two that weren't fitting in, right, under Stan Van Gundy. But it looks like they've decided to go the other route, just to go ahead and eliminate the coach, start fresh once more. Third time in 3 years is not a good sign, not when you have Zion Williamson, a tradition or a generational talent. But I think it's probably the smartest move. If it's not just one player and it was a host of them, you've got to go in a different direction. But you're right, the onus is completely on David Griffin and his front office, because they have not done a good job. They decided to trust Alvin Gentry, the carryover from Del Demps' tenure. That did not work out. He took 3 months, I think, Griffin did, in hiring Stan Van Gundy, and obviously right. that didn't work out. So they've got to get it right. Otherwise, yeah, we've got to point the fingers at the Pelicans' front office that changes may be needed there if this doesn't work.
Who does David Griffin answer to? Because I bet you Gail Benson, God bless her, how much of basketball does she know? Who does he have to talk to? Because all of this, and I mean all of this, is on David Griffin. He made the hire of the coach. Everybody knows it's a young team. How is that going to work? And then the team itself, I mean, a hodgepodge of misfit toys. I mean, it just didn't work. So to me, everything's on David Griffin. How is he still around?
Well, yeah, that's a great question. And if we've one thing we've learned under the Benson's ownership is that they gave a lot of autonomy to whoever was running the front office, the top dog. So with Del Demps, he was given a lot of leeway and a lot of decision-making when it came to player personnel. So let's face it, the ownership group, and it's not just Gail, I think it's her circle, right? Dennis Lascia, others high up in the executive office, formed that inner circle. But just like they give Mickey Loomis a lot of freedom to operate, they did the same with the Pelicans franchise. And obviously that didn't work out. Del Demps, now David Griffin's been given that same autonomy. And he even said he wouldn't have taken this job had he not had it. And you want, right? You want the GM, the guy that's in charge of making basketball decisions, to feel like he's running the show completely so that he can make all the decisions unabated and such. I feel like that's the best way for, you know, today, the hierarchy to work. But in the same instance, of course, is now how is he held accountable? And you're right. I think they're just going to have to, you know, whether it's a discussion, I'm sure it's been ongoing, right? He's been evaluated ever since he's been hired here, David Griffin. But going forward, yeah, he's got to be under a close microscope, you hope, because so far nothing's really worked. You've had two seasons to get when you've had two All-Stars on the team to where it's not just the playoffs, the top eight teams in the West make it. It's the top 10 when you include the play-in tournament. And the Pelicans haven't gotten in either season. So that does not bode well for David Griffin because he's the one that puts together the roster, decides on the coach, et cetera. So he does bear a lot of this responsibility. And you've got to think this is probably going to be his last chance to get a coaching hire right. Whether it goes right or wrong, he is probably, this, like I said, it's going to be the last one, at least in the immediate future, because things have not gone as well as I'm sure Gail and everybody else in that that brass office thinks they should have done.
I'm with you. Ali Cassell at the Bird writes. Okay, so Van Gundy gone. He won't coach again. He may get back into broadcast or he may just go back to Detroit and just retire, but he's done. So, you know, there's a lot of talk of names bandied about. There's six openings as we speak right now in the NBA. And a lot of people are mentioning Teresa Weatherspoon, who's part of the staff. In your dealings with her, give me the pros and cons. What do you like? What do you not like, if anything? And do you think that's a legitimate possibility?
I think it is a legitimate. I would go so far as to call her the favorite right now.
Okay.
Among the group of candidates, simply because she brings a lot to the table that is what I think David Griffin is now seeking in the next head coach. For instance, relationships with the players. That's number one. I think that's the main reason why Stan Van Gundy parted ways with the Pelicans today. It wasn't so much as because of the record, it's because they couldn't trust him to rebuild those relationships with the players that were fractured or were going to fracture further. Because as we know, that plays heavily on how much effort the team gives and therefore makes the playoffs. So they need somebody that's going to connect right away with the players. And I think with Teresa having been here now for 2 years and made an immediate impact. I remember in the first training camp a couple of years ago, she was brought in to be a two-way developmental coach under Alvin Gentry. Very first practice, we witnessed her, that's the media I'm talking about, witnessed her going, pushing Kenrich Williams really hard, and he was really taking in all the information, and he had several other Pelicans teammates around him. So we saw her coaching style front, but he was very receptive. And that's only continued. All those stories have continued. How many times this year we heard Zion Williamson mention her by name? Other players as well. They've all pointed the finger at what a great job. They've gone out of their way to point what a great job she does. And she's had an effect on their games. There was one game where I remember Zion Williamson made some kind of baseline jumper to help the Pelicans win late in the game because he's, as we know, he doesn't like to shoot those jumpers. He likes to get all the way to the rim, but he did at the urging of Teresa, and he thanked her for it at the end of that game. So I think that's important. I think that she's got that relationships already built. So you kind of like that continuity. But also, look, she's known as being a very intense, fiery, defensive-oriented coaching mind, and I think that's exactly what this team needs. If your problem last year was largely based on effort or execution, you need somebody that's going to get through the players. And she seems like she would be the type that could do that for you. So there's a lot of reasons, Jordy, but I think she clearly has shown that she has developed these relationships with the Pelicans players and how she's able to get through to them to where it leads to success. And I think that speaks volumes on what David Griffin should probably consider when hiring the next coach, especially her.
All right. Ali Cassell at the Bird writes, back to Stan Van Gundy. What was the issue between he and Brandon Ingram? What do you think caused this rift?
I think it's just they didn't speak the same language, so to speak, right? I had mentioned Stan Van Gundy. He's an older generation, much older generation than Brandon Ingram, especially with what players nowadays are used to, the star players. You can't coach with a firm hand, especially when you don't have the record to back it up. So maybe coaches like Rick Carlisle can get away with it because they, you know, as we know, Rick brought a championship with Dirk Nowitzki to Dallas.
Right.
They've had repeated years of success of making the playoffs, but Stan didn't have that. That was problem number one. And number two, it goes to a deeper personal level, a connectivity, right? To actually build a relationship, you've got to have a mutual understanding and just, like I said, speak the same language. So, for instance, Brandon Ingram sees the game one where he thinks he needs to impact it, specifically maybe say on the offensive side. Well, Stan's trying to teach him he's got to play more defensively, become a bigger leader, a better two-way player. Well, Brandon's not really going to hear him as much because it's not from a source that he's typically accustomed to listening to for advice. These young players, these young stars, you've really got to twist the language and speak, like I said, to the way they're going to listen to, adhere to all the advice you give to them. And so I just don't think Stan had that capability. And now, like I said, we're seeing it from other players. It wasn't just Brandon. So that was the biggest concern, right, when Stan was hired. Could he connect with the players because of the age gap and the generational gap and such, and the way the coaching is handled nowadays to where the players lead the league, but it didn't work out. So I'm thinking this signals that David's definitely going to go in a different direction. He's probably going to go younger with the next coaching hire for
Griffin.
Sure.
That's all on David Griffin. You mentioned Rick Carlisle. He's been the head coach of the Dallas Mavericks since 2008. Since 2008 in New Orleans, we've had Byron Scott, Jeff Bauer. Oh, my God. Mm-hmm. Monty Williams. How about that one? Alvin Gentry and Stan Van Gundy. So Jeff Bauer went from the front office to the coaching spot. That was just a disaster in the happening. And Monty Williams got him to the playoffs, got fired, and now look what he's doing. It's all about the players, man. He gets Chris Paul and Devin Booker, and look what they do. And DeAndre Ayton, and it's all about players. But, I'm just really – I'd love to know the checks and balances and who's the sounding board to David Griffin, because – you know, David talks a big game. David will make you feel like he is the smartest person in the room. He's very adept and very professional in his choice of words and how he spews them. He may be snowballing people. I don't know. I don't know David at all, but all I know is the job he's supposed to be doing, he hasn't done it.
Right. I mean, you've got to go by what's transpired over his tenure over these last 2 years. And like I said, no playoffs, no play-in tournament. The talent seems to be there. The Pelicans, one of the few teams, especially one of the non-playoff teams, to beat a slew of high caliber, like the top 10 teams in the league. I remember doing some research on that a couple months ago. So The talent is obviously there, and yet it's amounted to nothing, essentially, right? Yeah. No success whatsoever. So, yeah, David Griffin, his feet have to be held to the fire. There's no doubt. I'm sure he knows that. He feels that his head's probably going to be the next one on the chopping block, no matter how well the next coach does, and rightfully
right.
so. Today, I mean, we know it, Jordy. It's a result-based industry more than anything else. And I know that Griffin talks a big game, but I don't mind that as much, right? But just please back up your words.
Exactly.
When you talk about giving support, right, and all these superlatives you throw at these hires, and they don't work out, or the players you're endorsing, like some of your trades, Steven Adams and Eric Bledsoe, and keeping and advocating for Eric Bledsoe to stay in the starting lineup all season when he didn't perform and such.
Right.
That all needs to be, you know, that's David Griffin's responsibility too, not just the coaches.
Yeah, it makes no sense whatsoever. So he's got a lot of big decisions, and you know, you want to please Zion, So, you know, he likes Teresa Witherspoon. He also likes Lonzo Ball. And he, I remember him coming out and saying, yeah, me, B.I. and Zoe, man, we want to stick together. But how much is Lonzo going to be asking for? I mean, there comes a point in time where you got to convince your superstar, look, this is what's best for the team, best for the franchise, and we're going to put some other people around you, but then it's got to work, right? So, I mean, this is a make it or break it time for David Griffin.
Yes, that's going to be the next biggest decision outside of a coaching hire. Obviously, it's Lonzo Ball. Do you keep him? Do you resign him? And for how much? How high are you willing to go? Sounds like Lonzo Ball is going to ask for a lot. The first rumors I'm hearing now over the last month or so, he's going to ask for a lot more than I think anybody in New Orleans would be comfortable handing him. Somewhere north of $20 million per season over the life of his next contract, to where I think most of us wouldn't feel more than, what, $16, $18 million, considering what we've seen out of him. So, but, yeah, you're right. I think it does weigh, right? Brandon Ingram has definitely formed a relationship with Lonzo going back to his days with the Lakers, and he's gone out of his way to always throw support at him, and now we saw Zion do the same this year. So keeping the generational talent happy is big, and if that means, you know, having to keep a player maybe on a less desirable contract than you would like, then they might have to bite the bullet on that one.
Yeah. Well, Stan Van Gundy is out. David Griffin, all eyes are on you, and we'll see what happens. But my goodness gracious, does he take 3 months to hire a coach now, or do you think this thing escalates quite rapidly?
I have to think it gets resolved quickly, within a month's time. Look, most of the candidates that are up there, besides Teresa Witherspoon, they've interviewed already in the past. Going back to last October, a lot of the same names are being mentioned, like Jacques Vaughn, Charles Lee, et cetera. So there's no reason for it to take 3 months again. You already know these candidates, what they bring, what they offer, and such. So he's got to make a decision quickly. You want to get this coaching staff, I would think, ahead of the NBA draft coming up, because you want some of their input as well. You want to hear what they say about the existing roster and what they think and where you and how and you should improve it. So I think you've got to get, like I said, that coaching staff in place well before then.
Wow, crazy stuff, man. Ollie, thank you. Continue to follow Ollie and at the Bird Rights. They do a tremendous job covering this stuff. Instability, man. It has followed this franchise ever since they moved from George Shinn moved them from Charlotte to New Orleans. It has been, you just can't trust the front office to make the sound basketball decisions. I mean, that's not an opinion. I think that's a fact. It really is.
I cannot disagree with you, Jordy, one bit. You can go through almost any of the previous seasons and how it's unfolded and who's been in charge and who's been making those decisions, which have largely resulted in disappointment. So, yeah, a lot of the listeners should not have that much faith in the current administration because they haven't really given us any reason to.
Amen. Ollie, thank you so much. I greatly appreciate the time on short notice, buddy. You take care. Enjoy your week. You're going to be busy, but that's good.
Absolutely, Jordy. I mean, because the playoffs, I mean, my goodness, all these injuries, right? It's really tainted, I feel like, what this playoff experience should be. But, hey, it's good to focus on the Pelicans again because, hey, that's why we're here for.
Zion said it best. I'm watching these teams in the playoffs, and I'm telling you, the Pelicans aren't close. They are not close to being on that level. I'm sorry. They're just not. So I cannot wait to see what they try to put together this time to see if they can make it work. But they got a long ways to go, man. Thank you so much, Ollie. That's Ollie Cassell from At The Bird Rights. The Le Bon Temps Roulet Music TV show is returning to KDCG-TV. The next live tape will take place on Thursday, June 24th at Pombro's Cajun Restaurant featuring Troy Lejeune and Cajun Review. The show starts at 7 p.m. It's a free event. For more information, visit kdcg.com. More on the Pelicans, more on the LSU baseball search and stuff. 100 degrees, it feels like, outside. Aren't you glad you're in your car with the AC on or in your house or watching on TV as we are simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS? This is the Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
Better than ever. You're locked into the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, and the free mobile app.
All right, welcome back on this Wednesday, June 16th. Boy, last night, what a tale of two halves in the NBA as the Milwaukee Bucks led by 16 at the half. Should have led by more than that, outscoring Brooklyn 29-15 in the first quarter. And you know, the Nets couldn't throw it in the ocean, but they let the Slim Reaper hang around. And you may not like him, you may like him, whatever it may be, but Kevin Durant had one of those games that just solidified just how great of a scoring basketball player he is. In a game that they had to have on their home court with the series tied at two apiece, without Kyrie Irving, with a very limited James Harden, who did play 46 minutes but was 1 for 10 from the field, 0 for 8 from downtown, and finished with 5 points, very limited. Kevin Durant went the distance, played all 48 minutes, had 49 points when he took over in the second half, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. I mean, holy smoly, he was spectacular. And you know, he says he's always been second. He said, I was the second best player on my high school team. I was the second pick in the draft. I finished second in the NBA Finals. I finished second in the MVP race. He says, I'm tired of being second. I don't think he has anything else to prove. He's won NBA championships by going over to Golden State. He belongs at the top of the NBA mountain with no asterisks and no questions. He delivered the signature performance of the postseason and possibly in his career. He took over game 5 of the Eastern Conference semifinals and was just terrific. He was aggressive, got to his spots on the floor. His teammates found him. He didn't force shots. He just shot over people. He defended the rim. He's got those long arms. He hardly fouls anybody. He just has that reach. He's like a condor with that wingspan. He just showed how tremendous, tremendous of a player he is. 49 points, 17 rebounds, 10 assists, 3 steals, 2 blocks. He's amazing. He is amazing. And sometimes because he is on a team with Irving and James Harden, he doesn't get put at the level, but you could see if he wanted to every day, every game, he could do that. He could do that. He told Steve Nash's coach and the assistant of Steve Nash, who is a guy that's purportedly in the running for the Pelicans' job, Jacques Vaughn, that he didn't need to rest for a couple minutes. And Nash said, if we don't play him 48, we're probably not winning tonight. But you saw his tenacity. You saw his drive. He knew what he had to do, and he did it. So, congratulations! What an incredible performance last night. Kyrie Irving will not play in Game 6. He's still hurt with that high ankle. He's not going to play for a while. He's going to get treatment back in Brooklyn. The other big news of the NBA is Kawhi Leonard is ruled out for game five tonight against the Utah Jazz, and possibly more with a knee injury. They're fearful that he has an ACL issue. So that is terrible, terrible, terrible news for the LA Clippers. And there's no timetable for his return. According to our buddy Shams Charania, he says they feel like he suffered an ACL injury and he is out indefinitely. That would be, wow, that would be something. And then on the other front, Chris Paul has entered the COVID-19 health and safety protocols. The Phoenix Sun guard is out indefinitely. His next update on his status is scheduled for Saturday. So 36 years young, he may not be available to play at the start of the upcoming Western Conference Finals. But as of right now, we don't know when that series is going to begin, because we don't know if if the Clippers or the Jazz, how many games this series is going to go. It's currently tied at 2 apiece. We don't know if Chris Paul has been vaccinated or not. In March, he called vaccination a personal type decision. So, wow. All kinds of NBA news. And it's not good on any of those fronts. Again, Stan Van Gundy, the Pelicans, they preach defense. I laughed. I've been around that league too much. Players are too good. You got to try and get in people's way and make it difficult for them. And the Pelicans would do that once every 5 or 6 trips down the floor. But to keep harping on it and saying, we're going to get better defensively. You're not going to get better defensively. You just got the wrong players. I don't blame Stan Van Gundy for that. I blame David Griffin. I blame David Griffin for hiring Stan Van Gundy, knowing that you had a young team. How are you going to communicate with them? Why bring in an old guard? And I'm on the record for saying that when Van Gundy got hired. I did. But, hey, you roll with it. You see what happens. But you could tell early on, this was not going to work. It just wasn't. So, now, back to the drawing board. And all the rumblings around the league and all his peers and Zion's peers are telling him, dude, what are you doing there? It's going to be your third coach in 3 seasons. Shh, go fly the coop. You love New York. You love playing in the Mecca. Go play in the Mecca. I'm just saying. So it's just bad, bad front office decisions. And it's not just the first time. It's not just the second time. It's the definition of insanity. If you continue to do the wrong things again and again and again and not change, well, you're going to deserve what you get. And that's where the Pelicans are right now. I've said it. David Griffin talks a great game. He just doesn't back it up. He doesn't back it up. Made the wrong coaching decision. He made the wrong player acquisitions. It did not fit. Now what's he going to do? He's got to keep his Zion happy. So he's going to go to Zion and Brandon Ingram. Who do you want, guys? So who's running the show? Who is running the show? When push comes to shove, everybody wants to save their own backside. So David Griffin's going to go and humble himself in front of Zion and Brandon Ingram. Hey, guys, I want to make you happy. What's going to make you happy? Oh, you want Lonzo? Okay, we're going to have to pay him $22 million? Oh, sure, just to keep you happy. And that's the biggest mistake they can make, because Lonzo Ball is not worth $20 million. I'm sorry. Have you watched the NBA playoffs? Do you see his style of play compared to the guards that are still playing in the playoffs? Come on. It is not even remotely close. It isn't. Now, he's a nice guy, I think, to come off the bench, but you can't play a guy getting $20 million a year and pull him off the bench. I'm just wondering, is there a team out there that would fall for that? You're going to give him the ball late in the game and say, go win it for us? There's no way. There's no way. So anyway, the dysfunctionality that is continues to reign supreme, and I have little to no confidence whatsoever that they can get it right. I don't want to hear the talk anymore. I don't want to hear David Griffin talk about, oh, man, we're giving them everything they need. This is such a great organization, and the ownership is fabulous. No, go get the players. Go get players that fit, that work together, that care. That care. That's what you need. Bledsoe didn't want to be in New Orleans. He just kept collecting a paycheck. Just collect, and you had to continue to start him? What direct? Who gave that directive? Anyway, frustrated, to say the least. Stan Van Gundy, you're probably better off. I don't know what the payout is, what the severance is, but they were paying Alvin Gentry when they hired Stan Van Gundy. Now they're going to be paying Stan Van Gundy when they hire another head coach. Gail Benson, I wonder what she's thinking. All eyes on David Griffin. Do you have the faith and the belief that he's going to get it done? I haven't seen it yet, so why would I? Oh, but he won a championship at Cleveland. Yeah, yeah. Had a young LeBron James, the best on the planet. CD could be the GM and win a title with that. And that's no offense to CD. It's just the facts. So you're gonna have to you're gonna have to show me. I'm tired of hearing about it. You're gonna have to show me. And I learned a long, long time ago that this is a business. Okay, owners are in this thing to make money, and to make as much money as they can, because the Pelicans had been displaced to Oklahoma City. And they were a really good team. Chris Paul, Peja Stojakovic, David West, Tyson Chandler, and on and on. They were a good team. Very good team. One win away from getting to the Western Conference Finals against a team of the decade in the San Antonio Spurs, who won in Game 7. And I remember during the middle of that, they traded Tyson Chandler, and that destroyed that college-type team. And they were never the same. And because they weren't the same, Chris Paul packed his bags and forced a trade. And David West got out of town. They had a good thing going. But they didn't want to pay the money that it would take to sustain that. It's a business. So now, does David Griffin, what kind of directives is he getting, and who's making those basketball decisions to him? Gail Benson? Dennis Lauscha? Greg Bensel? Mickey Loomis? Who's the basketball guy? David Griffin's the only one? Trajan Langdon? I don't know. I don't know. Lot to be debatable about. Lot to be fearful of. And if they lose Zion Williamson in a year or two, what's going to happen then? Does the NBA leave New Orleans again? I don't know. I hate to paint such a doom and gloom scenario, but it's just bad. Just bad. Good for Stan. He's out of it. David Griffin, it's all on you, big fella. It's all on you. All right, we'll take a quick time out here. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one, set the stage for hour number two. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show. 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 on LUS. Whew, got that off my chest. Pelicans, the Smellicans. Ugh. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Jordy Holtberg Show on 103.7 The Game. It's the only show that delivers hot takes from way downtown.
Welcome back. As we wrap up hour number one, the U.S. Open tees it up tomorrow at Torrey Pines out there in La Jolla, California, a suburb of San Diego. Two former LSU Tigers will be teeing up, Sam Burns and Luis Gagne. It'll be the 121st U.S. Open beginning tomorrow. So we wish them the very best of luck. The College World Series opens up this weekend. The operative number in Omaha on Saturday will be 723. That's how many days since the last College World Series game. How about that? 723 days come Saturday. So let the games begin. Hour number one's in the books. Hour number two straight ahead. The Jordy Holtberg Show. 103.7 The Game. 103.7TheGame.com. Simulcast Stadium. 32.3. 133 LUS. Come on back. We will as well.
Live and local. This is Acadiana's sports station. 103.7 The Game.
The Houston Astros are world champions.
Streaming live on 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 103.7TheGame.com.
It is a safe touchdown.
This is the Jordy Holtberg Show.
Hey, baby, we're going to be here all day.
Call us up at 337-706-0111.
I like this kind of party.
Now, here's your host, Jordy Holtberg.
Hour number two of two, and away we go. It's Wednesday, hump day, June 16th, the year 2021. The big news of the day, Stan Van Gundy out as the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. Didn't even make it a year. Hired in October, fired in June. One and done, as they say now. The third coach in three seasons for the Pelicans, and it's all on David Griffin to come up with the answer and to get players. Plain and simple. Coming up in this hour of the program, he was an LSU baseball player, Chris Reed. We'll get his thoughts on this LSU baseball coaching search and some of the things he'd like to see upgraded at venerable Alec Box Stadium. Then back and better than ever, it's hump day with Michael Huguenin. Yes, indeed. He's got a new gig. He's excited about it. We are as well, and it's great to have him back on board. LaMelo Ball, the NBA Rookie of the Year, and he missed a bunch of games, but pretty good. Had a better season than his brother. I'm just saying. All right, without further ado, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, please.
It's getting hot in here.
Here's today's hot topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidably better.
CD, good afternoon. We see where players are. It's a personal preference about getting vaccinated. Well, the NFL is making it extremely difficult on unvaccinated players. Game travel. Only fully vaccinated individuals are allowed on the team charter. Individuals with religious medical exemptions must travel separately, must wear masks. They will be tested upon arriving. They'll have daily testing thereafter. They're banned from the cafeteria and meetings. They're banned from leaving the hotel to eat. They're making it tough. You better go get vaccinated if you're in the NFL. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon, Jordy. I'm almost certain that's going to become more of a thing, I think, across all sports. There's not a doubt in my mind to kind of start things off there.
Yeah.
That was, and then, you know, with the media side of things, basically, if you're not vaxxed, you aren't getting any access.
Right.
That's what it feels like. Obviously, you'll get the access, but you'll have to be, you won't be allowed anywhere near Airline Drive or the Mercedes, or excuse me, I want to say Mercedes-Benz Superdome, but just the Superdome for now.
Right.
But
and
it's wild.
So. Rightly
yeah.
so. You know, if I'm an employer of a radio station, of a television station, a newspaper, I'm urging my guys, reporters, to go get vaccinated so you can have access and do your job.
Oh, no, I agree wholeheartedly there. So that was no surprise there by me. Now I'm interested to see what's going to happen in the college ranks, Jordy, because we're going to probably hear some stuff about that sooner rather than later, just in terms of what the and that'll be obviously more of a case-by-case basis. I think LSU and the Cajuns, they'll handle things a little bit of a different way.
I'm still of the – I was always of the belief that, you know, fans getting into games, we'll open up 100%, but you got to be vaccinated. I don't know if they'll go to that extreme.
That's not going to end well, I don't think.
I mean, it's just – I mean, if I'm at the game and somebody's not wearing a mask, what do? You trust them? I don't know. Here's the silly thing. I went to a restaurant last week. And, you know, I've been vaccinated, so I walk in with no mask. And the owner says, look, Jordy, I apologize, but you got to get a mask to get in. I said, well, I've been vaccinated. She goes, I know, but all the staff has masks on. So I go get a mask. I walk in, sit down at the table, take the mask off, eat. That was it. Made no sense to me. Made no sense.
Yeah,
but rules are rules.
No, yeah, it's weird, Jordy. Even I've just been out there. I've been wearing the mask, and it's like it's just become almost out of just general like habit at this point, you know. And it's like the second I get in, second I get out, just put it on, take it off. That's it.
Yeah. There you go. All right. What else we got?
Oh, Jordy, we got a lot to get to. Namely, number one, Jordy, why did you leave the faucet on last night, Jordy? Because the NBA news just kept flowing out today, and it's like you'd think LaMelo Ball would be the big headline in the NBA, but no, we've got Kawhi Leonard, he's going to be out. Chris Paul out with COVID. Like, it just, everything is just hitting left and right. Like, you could very well be seeing an absolute mess right now in the NBA Finals, potentially, because, I mean, I saw something earlier today. Somebody kind of joked around with it, where, like, you'll have Solomon Hill leading the Atlanta Hawks, and the name has escaped me, who would be one of the other guys. But, like, basically, you have the most, like, Phoenix Suns against the Atlanta Hawks in the NBA Finals. If things go the way that people are expecting it to.
If Chris Paul isn't playing, then it's going to be the Utah Jazz versus, I don't know, Philadelphia. Does that excite you?
No.
I don't know. It's survival of the fittest, man. And unfortunately, man, that's terrible with Kawhi Leonard. I don't know how strong Chris Paul will bounce back from something like that. You know, he's going to have to miss time. He's not going to miss games or too many games. But
well, I think
still,
he's going to miss at least the beginning of the Western Conference Finals.
Yeah. Man, God, it's crazy. Crazy.
It was crazy.
But my Pelicans always seem to one-up everybody, man. They always steal those headlines, man. I'm telling you, it's amazing.
Well, they were kind of the first ones to just, like, bust things wide open. Van Gundy out 1 year as the head coach of the New Orleans Pelicans. I was definitely surprised by him more than anything, just because of the fact, again, one season and he's already out the door.
I thought if you make a decision like that, you make it soon after the season. You know, Washington made a decision, but they were in the playoffs for a cup of coffee. Man, do you have faith in David Griffin? I mean, I don't.
I'm starting to lose a lot of faith in David Griffin, to be honest with you. I think it's well past time to, like, move on from him. And in all honesty, I'm starting to think, and, you know, you and I talked about a couple of years ago with the whole Anthony Davis trade, and luckily the Pels were able to get Zion Williamson. It was kind of just, it's delaying the inevitable. I would not be surprised in the next 5 years the Pelicans are sold and they move somewhere else. It just feels like that's going to be the direction that they go, because at the end of the day, this is a football state, Jordy. I mean, we all know this. And the NBA just hasn't been able to be latched onto as much as they've wanted.
It's
been almost 20 years since the New Orleans Hornets came back, and there's been no true kind of upward movement in a fan base or anything. And attendance-wise, it's flatline. Even with Zion Williamson, even with Anthony Davis, it has not been able to get to a certain point. Sooner or later, Gail Benson's got to kind of look at things and realize she's got to cut her losses. It's not a knock against the Pelicans franchise, but there's absolutely no doubt in my mind that's something that's weighing heavily on her, Because if you can't get this done this season and you don't knock it out of the park here, Zion Williamson's gone. People want to give me hell about that on social media, but it's going to happen.
People get on you, CD? Really?
Oh, Jordy, like, I'll say this. People just absolutely hate the fact that I continually say that Zion Williamson's going to be gone in about 2 years. I just think that Zion Williamson, if things don't go a certain way, if they don't knock it out of the park here, it could be anybody. Teresa Witherspoon, Becky Hammon, Kenny Atkinson, who, by the way, last year I said they should have gotten in the first place. But, of course, the Pelicans organization does not listen to Under the Dome with CD on Saturdays, and they need to.
They should have kept Monty Williams. He was a good coach.
I'm not sold on that.
He was a good coach then. He's a good coach now. I just don't get it. I don't get it. Once again, front office thinks they just have to meddle and do whatever they need to do. But you certainly, there's a track record there. The best players in franchise history have all said, see you later, from Chris Paul to Anthony Davis. So there's a track record there.
Yep.
I mean, this is the, once again, we say it's the most pivotal offseason in franchise history. And I just don't know if those that are making the decisions can make the right decisions. I have no faith in them whatsoever. I don't.
Oh, I'm kind of the same way, Jordy. And for me, I think there's just a lot of different questions I have about the future of this franchise. I think more, and you brought up Monty Williams. You should have kept him. Honestly, it was the right time to do that, I think. Whenever you let him go, it was the right time to kind of do this. And again, a lot of it has to do with the fact that Anthony Davis, 100%, no matter what anybody says, he 100% had something to do with Monty Williams getting fired and you bring in Alvin Gentry, because Anthony Davis knew that he couldn't win with Monty Williams. Now, mind you, I think he couldn't win because of everything else that he had going on within that franchise. That's how I kind of like just look at things, Jordy.
Okay. Well, that's good. I'm glad you offer your opinion on it. But it's all about the players.
Yeah.
They have yet to put together the right players that have the right attitude, that have the right chemistry, that have the right purpose, the right goal. And that's the problem you face in the NBA. Everybody's out there looking at their next contract, and they got to put up numbers, and but if they all understood, if we just win, if we keep winning, all those things will work out. So unfortunately, they just don't get the right players, and that's management. That's management, and totally management. And David Griffin, I'm holding your feet to the fire. You have done a pathetic job so far, and all you're doing is collecting a paycheck. We'll see what you do this offseason.
Exactly, and he's kind of just continuing to bury himself. Right now, as we're talking, the press conference is going on right now, and I've seen this quote from the official Pelicans account, mm-hmm. and it's paraphrased because obviously you only got 280 characters on Twitter, and it says, quote, if we are not all in with each other, then this doesn't work. Come on now, like, this is the utmost of coach speak.
Again, David Griffin talks a great game. Talks a great game. Wow. This decision was not wrought out of our previous results. This was wrought in our philosophical difference in how to reach the next step. What?
Oh, no, this is absolutely like
garbage. It's garbage.
It's garbage, Jordy. And it's also, to me, it just sounds like gaslighting. It's basically like you're trying to make everybody else think that he's the one that's making the right decisions. When at the end of the day, he is definitely not making the right decisions for the future of this franchise. And I'm nervous to see who they're going to pick as the next head coach. If Jason Kidd is anywhere near this franchise, I am just going to be like, I'm out. Like, I'm out. Jason Kidd does not belong in the conversation. Teresa Witherspoon, I think she definitely deserves it. I don't know a whole heck of a lot about her, but I've heard good things, so I'm hopeful that they go towards that route. Just promote from within, and if it doesn't work out, Griffin and Witherspoon both got to go. Blow the whole thing up.
Remember,
not just player-wise, but everything.
When you hire from within,
yeah.
What philosophy do they have? They have the philosophy of the guy that they were working for.
Yep.
So that's a double-edged sword there. You got to be careful. You got to get the right person. It's not only do you have to be a taskmaster, but the players have to love you. You got to keep them all happy. You got to keep them aggressive. It's a hard gig if you don't have skins on the wall. If you don't. So, you know, if you don't have the NBA titles, players are going to tune you out. I've seen it so many times. So many times. It just is. It's a new type of athlete. It's a new way of thinking. It's, you know, oh, you got to pamper, you got to cater to, you can't, you got to coach the stars one way, and you got to be a taskmaster on the other. It's hard, man. It is hard. So good luck, whoever gets the gig. David Griffin, quit talking. You're a great talker. Just show me players, baby. Show me players. I can coach players. Anybody can coach players, but it's when you don't have players, that's when coaches get fired. It's plain and simple. There you have it. All right, there's our hot topics for the day, brought to you by Cajun Chef Hot Sauce. I'm so frustrated with the Pels. Can you tell? Yeah. But I'm not frustrated with Cajun Chef because it's great. It never lets me down. Always, for nearly 90 years, putting out the same great products, multiple products. We just talk about their Cajun Chef hot sauce, but their jalapenos are, oh my gosh, great on pizzas and anything. They've got it all. Do yourself a flavor. Try it. You're going to love it. You're going to love everything from Cajun Chef. Everything tastes better when you have Cajun Chef products on your table. Chris Reed, want to talk about baseball at LSU. Upgrades in the stadium. We'll get into that next. The Jordy Helfer Show, 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
He does it the only way he knows how, with his massive sports brain, sprinkled with a smudgeon of rabble-rousing. The Jordy Holtberg Show on 1037, The Game.
All right, welcome back. The search for the new LSU baseball coach continues. Everybody has sources left and right. I have no clue. I'm going to trust the powers to be to come up with the right person, because I love LSU baseball, and I hope it continues to be the viable entity in the sport that it has been for the past 30 years. We're welcoming in a new guest, but very familiar to all those that followed LSU baseball. He was a perfect game All-American in 2015, had a very, very nice career at LSU, got to the College World Series. But my question for Chris Reed is, were you a better baseball player or a better punter in football, big guy? How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on. And to answer the question, and it's a tough one, I would have to say baseball. Okay. But football is really not that far behind. A lot of people don't know this about my football career, and is that LSU was at one as a punter as well, and I was getting recruited by most of the other schools in the state. So, yeah, football career was good. Just ended up having a back injury in high school, and that's what kind of drove me towards baseball.
Gotcha. Three-time All-State punter at St. Michael's in Baton Rouge. So, three-time, man, that's pretty good. Pretty serious. Okay, you've come out on Twitter, and you've been very vocal, and I love it. You have a passion for your university and your baseball program. When you heard the word that Palmieri was retiring, what went through your mind?
Well, I kind of knew it was, it was a possibility. I heard some rumblings fairly early on, and just me knowing him and seeing him, I could kind of just tell with some of the decisions and just looking at him. I mean, he looked tired. He looked stressed out, and I knew obviously with his father passing away, and then right. with Tommy Lasorda, which a lot of people don't know is the godfather to Tommy, his son. Those are two big key people in his life. And mm-hmm. once those unfortunately, left the earth, it wore on him pretty hard. And you know, that and his, he has grandchildren that are coming along in age, and I just knew that they were getting to that point to where he was going to want to step aside and probably spend more time with them. So, you know, I'm happy for him and the fact that he can really focus on his self and whatnot. But you know, I'm excited for how the search is going and the next steps that LSU's taking to, you know, get the LSU team back up to par.
What, give me the description of what you think is the right guy. What does he have to bring to the table to handle this job and to keep this program where it belongs?
Well, I think there's at least a handful of guys that could be the right coach and can do a very, very good job at LSU. But just going off of, I think what makes a difference is what do kids nowadays want in a coach?
Okay.
And I feel like it has changed in the last 10 years, 15 years or so. And I'm sure a lot of people can kind of correlate with this and the fact that kids these days, they're not as, you know, they're not brought up like in what Skip would do as a coach. Or what a Palminteri would do as a coach in terms of how they coach.
Right.
They're not used to that type of coaching. And so I feel like a younger, more energetic, laid-back kind of coach would be the better fit. And that's why, like you mentioned, I've been outspoken on Twitter about it, and that's why I think the guy is Tony Vitello. And I know this weekend kind of upset some of the people that have watched the games with his you know, his outbursts and whatnot, but I think that type of fire is something that LSU baseball needs, and I think most of the people want it, and I know the players probably want it, but like I said, I mean, Vitello, McDonald, those would be my two top picks, and then Godwin would be third, and, I mean, he could basically, they're all three right there, you know, in the mix. It could be any three of those, and I'd be very, very happy with that, and then my fourth one would be Bianco. I think he could come in and do a good job as well. I just don't think he can, you know, he would make as big of an impact as those other three would.
Okay.
So.
All right. That's more than fair. Now, you said the number one request from the new coach better be major stadium upgrades. All right. What's wrong with the box? What do we need? Come on. Talk to me.
Well, you know, I understand that we try to pay homage to the old box with the new box and the setup of it. But it, you know, unfortunately, as great as the box is and the atmosphere is still great, with me traveling around to all the different, you know, colleges that I was able to experience during my time, there were glaring differences and glaring, you know, positive aspects of other stadiums that I necessarily didn't see at our home stadium.
Okay.
And so I think the first thing has to be the batter's eye. It's a monstrosity in the fact that it's not metal. You know, like I always really liked Arkansas's batter's eye, and I know a lot of people, you know, they're like, a batter's eye, that's like the last, that's probably the last thing. I mean, we need like cosmetic stuff or like other big things. And yeah, but the batter's eye is really bad at LSU. It's like
for those
a claw.
People, Chris, for those people out there, batter's eye is when the batter's in the box and he's looking out to center field. That's that big where no fans sit. There's no signage. It's just a big old wall, right? So what do you recommend for it?
Yeah. So, it is the big wall, and it helps the hitter pick up the ball, and so that nobody's sitting behind the wall, nobody's sitting behind the pitcher, and the ball can't get lost in any color scheme that may be back there. So, but ours is like a cloth, like a wind breaker material, and a lot of the other high end, you know, newer places have either a metal or a more solid structure back there. That looks nicer and is fancier, but that's one of the big things that aggravated myself and the you know, the coaching staff, so and the players. You know, we would mention about it a lot, but I think the pitching, the bullpens need to be taken out. I would like to see them put in underneath the stands in the outfield.
Okay.
I would like to see the suites extended all the way down the lines.
Okay.
So that way all the seats can be covered except for the ones that are around the outfield fence. Okay. And I would like to see chair backs. A lot of stadiums are going to chair backs, and I don't understand why. I mean, like I said, I know we were trying to pay homage to the old box, but you know, it's a new day and age, and I would like to keep up with a lot of the other facilities that are going up. So that's probably the big three of them that I would like to see. Okay. There's a couple other, you know, more intricate ones. I'd like the fans to be a little bit closer to the field. I feel like there's a lot of foul territory at LSU.
Amen.
But, you know, you Amen. Can't be too picky. Can't be too picky, I guess.
Yeah, I know. But, man, that's what made the old box so good, so intimidating. You were right on top of people, and that's great. And, look, I'd steal something from Mississippi State. That outfield, left field barbecue area and beer deck, I mean, that's right up our wheelhouse. Imitation is the highest form of flattery. Who cares if somebody else is doing it? Let's give our fans something fun.
Yeah. I mean, that right there would be a huge boost in not only getting people there early, but maybe even keeping them there the entire game. I mean, you see that a lot with football. You know, a lot of they're implementing more alcohol sales throughout the entire stadium, and I know baseball implemented it last year as well. But a nice, cool area to hang out and eat food and observe the game. When you don't have to be doing that stuff while you're in your seat surrounded by people. I feel like that would be a fantastic thing for LSU and for Alex Box and the fans.
I'm with you.
I don't see why we wouldn't want to try to get something like that in the new box.
Chris Reed, an All-American in D1 baseball, an All-State punter, majored in sport administration. What? Tell me about your career after baseball, after LSU. What are you doing now?
Yeah, so I am in the process of becoming a financial advisor for a firm out of New Orleans called Wealth Solutions. We are a wealth management firm, and so I'm in the process of doing that right now. I've had another job pre-COVID and did some things with construction management and some other defense contracting for the federal government. But now, like I said, now I'm in the wealth management world and in the process of doing that. And I do, you know, a little bit of baseball stuff on the side as much as I can.
That's
to
awesome.
kind of give back to the younger generation.
Let me ask you this question real quick. You got to take that Series 7 test and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm from,
yep.
They're not easy, big guy. So study. It's not easy. We had Todd Walker on yesterday, and it's gotten all around that he said if Mike Bianco got the job, he would love to sit down, and he'd love to be the hitting coach. What do you think of that?
I think it's fantastic. I've been lucky enough to get to know Todd. I've hung out with him a couple times, and the knowledge that man possesses of the game of baseball, and in particular hitting, is he's probably the most knowledgeable person that I know about, or I know about hitting. So I think that would be a home run, a knock out of the park. I know the knock on him is that he doesn't have coaching experience, but if you're in the baseball world, and I was telling this to somebody yesterday, is there's not too many coaches, you know, that I see, at least, and I'm not saying for that level completely, but just all levels of baseball, that are like the top-notch guys.
Yeah.
I'm just not seeing them being retained in the sport of baseball. So I think he's one of those top-notch, you know, guys that he's obviously not, he hasn't been a coach, but he's been on the, you know, he's with SEC Network and things of that nature. He's still been around the game. And I feel like he has the knowledge that can help our hitters reform their approach and also help out mechanically, because this year I have seen a lot of mechanical flaws in a majority of our hitters. You know, and I think that he would be a great candidate to have.
Awesome. Chris, I can't thank you enough, man. Good luck with your new career. But we'd love to get you back on again, man. And so if you don't mind, we're going to call on you. And we'll see where this baseball search goes. I got to believe it's going to be sooner rather than later. Don't you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everything that I had, you know, I had been told for, you know, however long is that O'Sullivan was the guy. And so I kind of butted out of all the ins and outs of the search. I didn't want to, you know, overstep anybody, but O'Sullivan was the guy. And when I heard the Board of Supervisors had shot down that because of his off the field baggage, I knew it was a wide open race. And, you know, I knew a couple other schools were going to be looking for coaches as well. And that was going to make the search a little harder on our university. But, you know, look, I respect and admire Scott Woodward. I think he's done a great job, and he hasn't done anything that shows me that I shouldn't trust his ability and intellect to make the correct choice. But I would assume it would come sooner rather than later, unless they're going to make a big splash and get somebody that, you know, like somebody that a lot of people aren't looking at. So you never know, but hopefully it's done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, we're going to bring Joe Torre out of Major League Baseball and have him come manage the Tigers, something like that. How about it? Chris, thank you so much. All the best to you, and we greatly appreciate your time.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, buddy, you take care. Chris Reed joining us. We'll take a quick time out here. When we come back, he's back and better than ever. Michael Hugenin rejoins us. It's about darn time. That's next here, the Jordy Helfert Show, 103.7 The Game and 103.7thegame.com.
If there's anyone at Acadiana's sports station that could school you in a game of horse, it's Jordy Holtberg. Now let's get back to the Blonde Bomber on 103.7 The Game.
Oh, I should have gotten my man CD to dig up the archives of an old Peaches and Herbs song, Reunited, and it feels so good after what seems like forever. He is back and better than ever with us, the one, the only, Michael Hugenin. Michael! Man, it's great to have you back, buddy. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks for having me on again. Yeah, I'm starting a new job with a new website, on3.com. The website goes live August 15th. We've already made some pretty good hires. Ivan Mazel is one of them. And if you're a recruiting person, this site was started by Shane and Terry, who started Rivals.com, then started 247, and now he's on to On3. And there's going to be, you know, I like recruiting. There's going to be a lot of stuff recruiting wise that is going to be extremely interesting. And we're also going to have a very good national staff. Covering national college football and basketball.
That's awesome. I'm always curious, what's the On3? Where did that come from? What does that mean?
I think it's like when you break a huddle back in the old days, you know.
Okay.
That kind of thing. Everybody, you know, On3. And then you clap your hands and walk to the
line. Okay, got it.
Walk out to the,
we've had Michael on for, God, over a decade now, and always valued your opinion. And the one lesson I always learned from you, Mike, was this is the off season, and if your program is in the news at this time of the year, it's never good. And here we hear that Arizona State is under investigation for multiple violations under head coach Herm Edwards. Oh, my gosh, here we go.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, Herm Edwards seems to me the type that would not break any rules whatsoever. And you're right. I mean, the fact that it's mid-June, June 16th, and Arizona State's in the news. I think they'd much rather be in the news for, hey, what's Jaden Daniels going to do this year at quarterback? But instead, yeah, you're hearing reports that egregious rules breaking went on. And obviously the NCAA's involved, so it's going to take a long time before everything is hashed out. But yeah, it's
it's not a good look for Arizona State. The fact that they're even under investigation for this, that's not a good thing.
According to this report from Pete Famel and Yahoo Sports, apparently an anonymous person sent a dossier of dozens of pages to the ASU athletic department with screenshots, receipts, pictures, and emails related to these on-campus visits during the pandemic. I just want to know what this person, why does he hate Arizona State so much? My gosh.
Yeah, and to me, the first thing I thought when I saw that is, well, that's someone that's disgruntled, even either a current employee who's ticked off or a former employee who's extremely ticked off. Because, yeah, the whole screen, the idea that you would have screenshots of this kind of stuff, to me, lends credence to the fact that you were an insider of sorts. Right. You knew what was going on. You had access to all this stuff. And disgruntled is the first thing that came to mind when I saw that.
Michael Huguenin, on3.com. Do you believe, are you in favor of the college football playoff expanding to 12 teams? And you think it's going to happen as soon as two, three seasons from now?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked for a long time, and we all knew that the playoff was coming, even though they said it's not. You know, okay, now it's like we got a 14 playoff, we got a long contract, and, you know, we'll discuss that idea once the contract ends. Well, we're a long way from the contract ending, and not only did they expand from four, they didn't go to six or eight. They want to go from four to 12. And they've said it's not going to happen in 2021 or 2022. The earliest it could happen is 2023. And I've actually seen people say, well, that they're going to wait until the contract runs out to actually do this. I don't think they're going to wait that long, strictly because of financial reasons. I think that the last year and a half with the pandemic has shown that athletic budgets aren't nearly as robust as people thought they were. So even in the SEC, which in the Big Ten, with two leagues that print money, there's been belt tightening. So if teams in the SEC and Big Ten are having some financial issues, what's it like for those in the Pac-12 and the Mountain West and the Sun Belt and the MAC? So the amount of money that's on the table with an expanded playoff field is enormous. And again, even when things were going well, you had athletic department folks diving under couches for nickels and dimes. And we're not talking nickels and dimes here with the expanded playoff. We're talking stacks of hundreds. So it's going to get done sooner rather than later. But I also think that, you know, I'm an old guy and I'm cynical that they ain't stopping at 12. At some point, it's going to be even larger. And, you know, don't forget, the FCS has a 24-team playoff. Yes. You've got teams with 6-5 and 7-4 records in the hunt for national titles. And I think it's going to be eventually that one day in the FBS ranks. I think then by then they'll all be too old and won't care anymore. But another thing I thought, you know, there was a lot of things that went through my mind when I saw them going to 12. Think about how the 1-4 matchups have been dogs.
You're right.
In the playoffs.
Yep.
Now you're going to have 1-8, potentially. I mean, let's get serious here. So, and again, you know, teams bemoan that, oh, I'm team number 5 and team number 6, we're just as good as team number 4. Now you're going to have teams 13 and 14, we're just as good as team number 12.
Sure.
The fact that, okay, if you're a top 4 seed, you get a bye, but you don't get a home game in the playoff,
right.
Whereas teams 5, 6, 7, and 8 would get a home playoff game. I mean, there's so much detail that still needs to be ironed out, I think that, and you know, the whole, we all know the reason they're going to have the quarterfinals and semifinals at bowl sites because they want to prop up the bowls. Mm-hmm. Never mind that the fact that you're going to a 12-team playoff makes a lot of bowls even more irrelevant.
Exactly.
And there's already talk of as many as 10 bowls could go by the board. So, again, there's a lot of unanswered questions that still remain. But I think the main takeaway, obviously, is If they do expand to 12, what does that do to the regular season? And I'll be honest. Let's say you're Ohio State. Let's say a good year you're LSU, you know, LSU not last year, but in the normal season of late. You're playing games in November against Alabama and Michigan that mean a huge deal. Now, we're going to play off anyway. Who really cares? And, you know, okay, is the idea of we could be a 2 seed or we could be a 6 seed? And maybe that does engender the same level of intensity. But I saw somebody tweet out that, you know, the idea of a game of the century, those are gone.
Yeah,
and
true.
I think that's right. There's not going to be any regular season game anymore once the field goes to 12 that's going to be do or die.
Michael Hugenin with us, editor of On3.com, gets underway in August. It's going to be good. I can promise you with some of the new employees that are there, that it's going to be very, very good. You mentioned LSU. You were there when they had the season of seasons, and then they had the precipitous fall because they lost a lot of players to the NFL. In looking at LSU and looking at the schedule, looking at the SEC, are you buying stock on LSU this year?
Well, I think they'll be better than they were last year.
Okay.
Defensively, they got to be better.
Yes.
And that's because the guy who was running the defense was ill-equipped to run the defense. He's now gone. There are some pieces on the defense. There's talent on that defense, even though it didn't show up last year. I mean,
yeah.
Stingley and Ricks, potentially top cornerback duo in the country. I think the defensive line will be better. The linebackers, I'm still not 100% convinced on all that. But, again, the defense will be better than it was last year. I think that's a given. Offensively, how good is Max Johnson going to be? Can Davis Price be the lead back? I'm not sure about that. But there's going to be, you know, maybe it's a committee approach, and that's fine. The receiving core, I think huge things, obviously, are expected from Keyshawn Boutte. He's really good. There's some other guys that are going to have to step up their production. Obviously, the talent is there. Can their production match their talent level and the expectations?
Is it Alabama at the top? And then
the October schedule is difficult as well.
Yeah.
Two road games. Then the home games are Auburn and Florida. Alabama's early November. Texas A&M's going to be a tough finale. And I think the road trip to open the season against UCLA is going to be a little bit more difficult than people think.
I
think UCLA finally knows what Chip Kelly expects offensively. The talent level, obviously LSU has the talent and a benefit. I still think that could be a tough opener, though. And I assume there'll be more LSU fans in the Rose Bowl than there will be UCLA fans. So it won't be a true, I mean, yes, it's a road game, but the atmosphere I don't think is going to be intimidating in any respect.
I'm with you. And, of course, we got the word yesterday that 100% capacity in the Rose Bowl. People have been planning this trip ever since that came up on the schedule. So it's been a long time coming. There'll be a wave of purple and gold there, and I'm thrilled that it's opened up. Saban around till he's 77? Can you believe that?
Yeah. I wants more titles and, you know, all the power to him, but I'll be honest. If I'm 77 and still working, something's gone really wrong. So, there are coaches who that's all they want to do. Tony La Russa, who was out of baseball and then came back in. I think he's managing at age 77, the White Sox had the best record in the AL.
Yeah.
So, and obviously I don't think anybody thinks Alabama's going anywhere.
Right.
It's still surprising to me that you'd want to be a head coach in college football at age 77. But you look at Alabama again this year, they're the favorite to win it all for a reason. There is no rebuilding, strictly reloading, and every team in the country would trade their roster for Saban.
You're right. Michael Huguenin, man, we wish you nothing but the very best. It's so good to hear your voice again. I'm glad everything's going well. We have missed you, but we're going to lean on you again, big guy. So we look forward and great success. Anything we can do to help promote on3.com, you got it.
Appreciate it. And yeah, hopefully I'll be on weekly again with you. That's cool with you.
Guess what? You are. Starting now.
All right, cool.
You're done.
Okay.
Wednesday.
Excellent.
Hump Day with Huguenin. Great. We're bringing it back. There you go. All right, Michael Huguenin of on3.com. He's so good. He's just so smart. He just knows his stuff. He really, really does. All right, we'll take our final timeout. We'll wrap it up. Some birthday wishes and inside sneaking tomorrow. How about that? The Jordy Helfrich Show, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, simulcast on Stadium 32.3, 133 LUS.
Time to open up the vault for the 103.7 The Game's This Day in Sports History.
June 16th, 1970. Brian Piccolo dies of testicular cancer in New York City at the age of 26. The Chicago Bears running back and his friendship with Gale Sayers was immortalized in the TV movie Brian's Song. That was This Day in Sports History. We now return to 103.7 The Game, Acadiana's sports station, simulcast on Stadium 32.3.
I cry every time I see that movie, without question, without fail. Brian's Song. If today is your birthday, June 16th, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. You share it with No Mas, No Mas, right there in the Superdome. Sugar Ray Leonard said, fighting Roberto Duran. Duran says, No Mas. Duran is 70 years young today. And on the eve of the one major he has not won, Phil Mickelson is 51 years old today. Special thanks to Ali Cassell from At the Bird Rights, Stan Van Gundy, goodbye, Chris Reed, talking LSU baseball, and Michael Huguenin, the editor of on3.com. CD, thank you so much for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening in and watching us, and thanks to our partners that make it possible each and every day. Come on back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4. Same great station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com, simulcast on Stadium 32.3 and 133 LUS. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich.